Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Back in Stark, Vegas, we drove through the night last night, got home about 4:30, slept a few hours, got up, interviewed Nichols coach earlier today. You can read that over at jeanspage.com. And Coach Herring was very kind and generous with his time, as always. I appreciate these guys so much making time for us to give our readers some insight into their team and also to kind of get their impressions of Brian O'Connor and our team. But, I'll be happy to go to bed tonight. But, that's what excellence demands. And we were interesting weekend Austin, Texas, as you guys know. We had to get one. We wanted to get two. Well, we got what we had to get. We didn't get what we wanted. So we're going to break down the weekend. We got a cool top 10 list for you by request. We'll look around the SEC and also, of course, it's kind of looking where we are right now with 2 weeks left to play in the regular season. It's so interesting, too, to kind of look back over the grind, right? I mean, there's just so much you look back. It seems like just yesterday we were heading down to Biloxi. And I had to have somebody help me get my car out of some sand. Yeah, at the ballpark, not on the beach. But, you look so forward to this, man, and it feels like it's over in no time, right? I mean, there's 3 months in the season, and here we are now basically with 2 weeks left in the regular season. And, of course, then we'll get ready for the SEC tournament. Big news today out of Birmingham for those of you that haven't heard, and maybe you need a little more information here. I'm going to read to you directly from the Southeastern Conference release. Some people refer to this as a source, right? That a media relations release is a source. It's not. Per the media relations release from Ben Beatty of the Southeastern Conference, the Southeastern Conference will implement a challenge system for balls and strikes on an experimental basis for each game of the 2026 SEC baseball tournament, similar to the process implemented in Major League Baseball games this season. The system will permit teams to challenge an umpire striker ball call via an automated ball tracking system that monitors the exact location of each pitch relative to the specific batter's zone. The introduction of this challenge system at the SEC tournament reflects our continued commitment to innovation, said SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. This addition represents a continued step forward for our game, aligns more closely with the professional level, and supports the development of our student athletes as they prepare for success at the next level. For the SEC tournament, each team will have three challenges to start the game. If a challenge is successful, the team will retain the challenge. If the original call is confirmed, the team will lose a challenge. Upon a challenge, the pitch location will be compared against the electronic strike zone. The result will then be displayed on a stadium video board and broadcast. The SEC baseball tournament will be played May 19th through 24th at the Hoover Met in Hoover, Alabama. End of quote. I think this is a great thing. One of the things that Commissioner Sankey didn't say that I think is also important here. We talked about the development of our student athletes. In addition to that, it's the development of our umpires. That's an important aspect of this, right? And here's the thing. Professional people want to be evaluated and scrutinized, right? Because if you're doing a great job, then it validates that you're doing a great job. If you're doing a poor job, then you can take corrective measures to do a better job. Everybody that wants to improve doesn't mind being measured, period. And here's the thing. If you don't measure up, then we've got to find people to do. We talk about it. It just means more. In the Southeastern Conference, we have to make sure that's not just a creative hashtag, that it actually has some value. So this is a very positive step. I'm eager to see how it works. You know, year before, we implemented the double first base. And people were like, oh, this is going to be crazy. It's turned out to be a really good thing. It's reduced collisions at first base. There hasn't been a lot of problems, confusion with like guys touching the wrong bag. There was a first year. I guess it has been 2 years now that I think about it. But there hasn't been, any disruption to the game that we love. We had some instances over the weekend and certainly back during that Georgia series where ABS would have been very important. And you guys know against UCLA, Aiden Teal was called out on a ball that was probably a ball and a half inside that would have forced in a run, right? It's just so crazy how life works. But I'm a firm believer that everything that is measured improves. I absolutely believe that's the case. It's the case for my business. It's the case for your business. Whatever is measured improves. When you begin to set foundational standards for certain attributes, and you begin to evaluate those things and then share those findings with your staff, and you put maybe some consequences behind them, guess what happens? People do a better job. That's what this is all about. It's about the umpires doing a better job. But that's the thing, too. As a guy that has coached baseball, I can tell you, if an umpire thinks that the bottom is one thing and ABS shows that it's not, so like in the first inning, you know, we get a called low strike against us and we hit the ABS button, they challenge it, and now all of a sudden it's like, oh no, that you called that a ball, but that's a strike. Well, for the umpire, that is a great tool because now he's like, okay, I got to bring the zone up a little bit. You can correct it early on. And so I think that, again, this is a very positive thing. I know some baseball purists out there that say, hey, I don't want to hurt the human element, but the human element at times can be flawed. So this is a great thing. I'm eager to see how it works like all of you, but I commend Commissioner Sankey and everybody involved with SEC Baseball trying to improve the quality of our game. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company. Speaking of quality, Bulldog Burger Company, an incredible sponsor for the show, but also in addition to that too, man, what a great contribution they make to our community. They do. Hey, when we did Rock Vegas, I don't know if we talked about this way back when, you know, the first concert, the first NIL concert in the history of the Southeastern Conference. How about that? That's true. The Eat With Us group catered meals for the bands. Yeah, cool things. Like the kids in Twist, they went to Bulldog Burger Company. Lily and Axe went to Harvey's. And the boys in Four-Way Stop went to the Central Station Grill. So everybody got a quality meal courtesy of the Eat With Us group. I did not. I was too busy freaking out and stressing and making sure we pulled off a great event. But we weren't able to do that without the help of the Eat With Us group. Bulldog Burger Company has been synonymous with quality in the Golden Triangle area and beyond. Three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Star Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. And check out those new smash burgers. You'll be glad you did. It's a very tasty, nourishing, and filling option on the Bulldog Burger Company menu. You can also get that Bischoff cheesecake. You can get the chili cheese fries. And even if you get it to go, they give you all of the ingredients in individual containers so you don't get home and have a soggy mess, right? They care about the quality of your meal, whether you're eating in-house or getting it to go. Get that chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. I like to order my shake just before I ask for the check. Like when I'm beginning to kind of wind down the appetizer, I start thinking about which one that I want. And then when I'm finishing my entree, as the server walks by, I say, hey, we're going to be getting a Nutella shake. Matter of fact, make it two to go. And then we drink those on the way home. Because we're cool like that. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet, M-E-A-T. All right, let's break down the series. Take a quick look at this. And pitcher's duel, we expected it with Dylan Valantis and Thomas Valankas going in game one. We knew that runs would come at a premium. And you've got to really manage the game especially well here because you're not going to string a lot together. The teams combined for just 11 hits. Actually, State out-hit Texas 6-5. And we got going pretty early. Fry grounds out to first. Reese goes down swinging on a full count. However, he hustles to first and reaches on the wild pitch. So now we've got a runner on. Then Sully, infield hit here, hits that ball really well. It's over 100 off the bat, and they couldn't field it cleanly. So it's an infield single. So we got runners at first and second. A runner in scoring position with less than two outs, and you just want to get a ball in play. Unfortunately, we don't. Blake Bevis strikes out swinging, and then Parker goes down swinging. Bottom of one. Valankas gets a chance to put some things together here. He gets Robbins and Tenney both to go down on strikes. And then Pack Jr., who was good this weekend for them. We knew he would be. He walks on a full count. Rodriguez then grounds out to short. So nothing doing for either team there in the first. Top of the second, chance flies out to right, and then Aiden Teal singles back up the box. All of a sudden, we've got a runner on. We try to be aggressive here. And listen, a lot of people complained about this. I have no complaints about the play. We're trying to be aggressive. We understand runs are going to come at a premium. You got to go force the action. You got to play to win. And the only reason you guys are upset is because we got thrown out, right? I know Aiden Teal's now 6 of 11 in stolen bases. Some of those have been because we've gone on first move. You got a left-hander up there. You're not going to be able to get a big lead when you got a left-hander kind of staring you down to his glove side, right? That's just how life works. We go on first motion, and if Maluski puts a ball in play, we're easily going to go first to third here. Might even score if a ball scoots into the gap. Unfortunately, he gets thrown out, and then Maluski strikes out looking. Bottom of second, leadoff double by Mendoza from Texas, and all of a sudden there was some exuberance in those that came to the game. There was a lot of weather in the forecast. We pushed the game back an hour. Really hurt the crowd. It was chilly and cool, too. A lot of moisture in the air. Becella then grounds out the second. That moves the runner to third. And then Larson grounds out the second. That scores the run. So the leadoff double ends up scoring without the benefit of a hit. And then Borba strikes out swinging. So it's 1-0. Top of third. State goes 1-2-3. Woodson down on strikes. Fry grounds out the second. And then Reese strikes out swinging. Bottom of the third. We're matching pitch for pitch for the most part here. Mansour fouls out to the first baseman. Robbins flies out to right. And then Carson Tinney, who didn't do much this weekend, flies out to center field. Game kind of settles in here. Both pitchers getting comfortable. Top of the fourth. Sully strikes out swinging. Bevis strikes out swinging. Parker strikes out swinging. So they strike out the side. Bottom of four. They're trying to add to the lead. However, we're able to make big pitches. Pack walks. Again, lengthy at bat, goes full. Rodriguez gets the sack bunt down. Mendoza then flies out to left. The runner can't advance. However, then there's a pass ball. He does take third, but we get Becerra to strike out looking. So 1-0 as we go to the fifth. Bulldogs had a really good chance here in the fifth. Bryce Chance, who I thought had a pretty good weekend, singles to the right side. We need to move this runner. We do. And frankly, I would have bunted, but it kind of worked out the way we intended, even though Till gets out here. Till strikes out swinging, but Chance makes it to second on a wild pitch. So you get the benefit of the bunt without getting a bunt. Maluski then walks. Now, again, for the second time in this ballgame, we got two men on with less than two outs. Ryder Woodson started the game. He flies out to right. Chance tags and takes third, and then Maluski still second. So now we got two runners in scoring position. Just need Gehrig Fry to get a base hit for us. Unfortunately, we don't get that happen. And we strike out, you know, ball was up in his zone, and we strike out on a check here. So, again, a base hit there probably scores two. At worst, we're tied. At best, we're ahead 2-1. I guess technically 3-1 if we're wishing there. Bottom of five, Texas adds on here. Larson goes down swinging, and then Borba flies out to center field. So two quick outs, and we feel good about life. Mansour, the nine-hole hitter, then singles back up the middle. And then there's the free 90. We talked about that in the preview of the show, on the preview of the series. You can't give up free 90s. And this one comes back to get us. Because he's still second, Robbins then singles through the right side, and he's a great hitter. And the run scores. If he's standing at first base, he goes to third. But because we give up the free 90 here, he scores. Then Robin's still second. And then Tenney's hit by the pitch. Now there's two men on and Pack singles to left field. Run scores. It's 3-0, and everybody in Texas is feeling good about life. Rodriguez flies out to right. The end of the inning. Bulldogs are down three. Top of six. Reese grounds out to the second baseman. Another lengthy at bat. Sully, lengthy at bat, grounds out. Bevis walks on four pitches. And then we bring in Vitas Valinkas in place of Parker because Parker was struggling with the left-hander. And then Valinkas goes down looking. Bottom of six. I would bring in Mason Miller in place of Maddox Miller, pardon me. Mason Miller's offensive line consultant now. Maddox Miller comes in and walks Mendoza. And then we induce a double play ball. So quickly, we're out of this thing without a lot of damage. Two quick outs, Larson gets an infield hit, goes second on a wild pitch, but we get Barber to strike out looking. So a little traffic on the bases, but nothing too serious to worry about. They bring in Hayden LaFeu here in the seventh. Chance grounds out to short. Teal strikes out swinging. Malewski doubles to the left side. And Kevin Malewski, again, kind of getting it going a little bit here. And you got him hitting down there in that second cleanup spot, as we call it, at eight. Doubles to the left side. And then Woodson goes down swinging. So, again, runner in scoring position, and we can't get a big hit. Bottom of seven. 1-2-3 inning here for Miller as Mansour pops out to short left. Shortstop has it. Robbins goes down swinging. Then Tenney goes down swinging. Top of eight, very first pitch. Kind of a frustration swing here, but it kind of gets us going. We hadn't done much in a while. And then Garrick Fry hits a solo home run to left. It was fair by about 15 to 20 feet. It hit off the Longhorn out there just left of the bullpen, but for some reason they wanted to review it. I think it's one of those things like timeouts. We don't want to take them home with us. They review it. It's a waste of precious life. Life is short. Death is certain. I don't know why we had to endure that. Nevertheless, it's a home run. And now all of a sudden, Reese, lengthy at bat, gets a walk. So it's a 3-1 ball game, and now the tying run comes to the plate. Noah Sullivan then strikes out looking on three pitches. That can't happen. As a leader of our team, that simply can't happen. You got to spoil a pitch. You can't be fooled there. Didn't even get the bat off our shoulder. Bevis then singles to the left side. That chases Reese to second. So now the tying runs are on base. The go-ahead run is at home. They bring in Burns. Valencius goes down swinging. Was not a good at bat. And then Chance grounds out the second. You know, he's our guy with two outs and runners on, but unfortunately didn't come through here. Bottom of eight, we bring in Jack Gleason, and who had a good outing here. Didn't have a great one on Sunday, but had a good outing on Friday. He gets Pack to ground out the first. Rodriguez grounds the first. He tosses to Gleason, who covers, and Mendoza then flies out to center field. All right, top of the ninth inning, last chance for the Bulldogs. They bring in Zach Cozart, former Mississippi State commitment when Scott Foxhall was let go and Justin Parker was brought in. Cozart and the family says, yeah, we don't know Parker. We knew Scott, and we're going to reopen things up. They do. They land with Texas, and here he is shoving for us, against us. Till goes down swinging. Malewski goes down swinging. Stallman goes down looking, and that's your ballgame. And again, that one inning made all the difference, right? You give up two runs. Both of them after two were out on stolen bases, and then they get the timely base hit. That was the difference in this ballgame. The pitching was, for the most part, on par on both sides. But Texas takes free 90s and gets a couple of big hits, and that proves to be the difference. And again, Bulldogs had six hits in the ballgame. Nobody had more than one. Garrick Fry, Noah Sullivan, Blake Bevis, Bryce Chance, Aiden Teal, Kevin Malewski, all with safeties in the ballgame. But Bulldogs strike out 19 times. Guys, you're not going to beat anybody striking out 19 times. There may be a rare exception out there. It's just not going to happen. And we expanded the zone, and we swung at some pitches that were out of the zone, and it cost us. At times, you try to do a little bit too much. But again, you look at their stat line, three runs on five hits, and it seemed like every one of their hits, for the most part, was impactful. They're a good ball club. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. But that's game one, so we go into game two knowing we've got to win to get even. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. And for some, summer is their favorite season of the year. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, adventure becomes a focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough. It could be overwhelming. Then they start counting down the minutes until the kids are back in school. And you feel like you're wasting all these days of beautiful sunshine. We plan to get out and have some fun as a family too, but we plan to thrive and not just survive. Therapy can help people better understand their needs and feel more confident setting boundaries and create a version of summer that actually feels good. BetterHelp has over 30,000 therapists. It is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct, and they are fully licensed in the United States. The reality of it is you need to learn how to say no. You don't have to say yes to everything. Take advantage of BetterHelp and take charge of your summer. You don't have to say yes. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off BetterHelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com. And fortunately, we do. Let's kind of break this game down too. This was a lot more fun up until the very end. And then we were about to shoot all of our fingernails off, right? It's pretty crazy, right? It's just absolutely crazy how baseball works sometimes, right? I mean, again, this one was kind of shaping up like a pitcher's duel. It was. And it's interesting to know. I thought Duke Stone gave us a great start. Now, I do think maybe you don't push Valenkas and Stone too much against Texas. Obviously, you want to win the series, but you can't go all in and then exhaust those guys and then put them on the road to ineffectiveness this weekend with us having to play a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. So here we go, top of one. Fry grounds out to first, reached and doubles to right center. Here we go. Runner in scoring position, less than two outs, and we can't get a ball in play. Sully and Bevis both strike out swinging. Simply cannot happen, but it does. Bottom of the first, leadoff walk to Robbins. Lengthy at bat there, but we walk him. And then we throw him out. Tindy then flies out to right field, and Pat grounds out to second baseman. So, we face the minimum there. Leadoff walk, but we got out of it fairly easy. Top of second, Parker down swinging. Chance flies out to left, and then Teal goes down swinging. So it's beginning to feel a little bit like game one. Bottom of second, Stone matching Riojas. Rodriguez flies out to center. Mendoza strikes out swinging. Then Becerra, a two-out single, and then goes to second on an error as Jacob Parker mishandles the ball out there, but it doesn't hurt us. Larson flies out to left field. I had somebody tell me earlier about all these errors. Guys, for the most part, the errors didn't hurt us. I know that's an unusual observation, but we made three errors in this ball game and won. Never mind. I don't want to say anything. So nevertheless, we get back here. Top of third after the Larson flyout. Top of third. Malewski goes down swinging. Wires and singles to the left side. And good weekend for Drew Wires, especially defensively. Fry grounds out to second, but Wires takes second. And then Reese, a man in scoring position. We can't get a base hit. We go down swinging. Base hit there. We're going to score a run more times than not. All right, bottom of third. Borba down swinging. Mansoor down swinging. And then Robbins gets into a full count and is plunked by the pitch. But Tindy strikes out, looking to strike three. So Duke Stone, again, giving us a quality start. Top of four. Sully flies out to right. And then Bevis flies out to left. And then on a 1-2 count, Jacob Parker takes one the opposite way. This one did not need a review. Neither did the one Friday night. But nevertheless, they elected to pass on this review. And so it's a 1-0 ball game. And you feel like the game is rewarding you a little bit. Chance grounds out to the pitcher. So we got a 1-0 ball game going to the bottom of four. We need a clean inning here from Stone. For the most part, we get it. Pat grounds out the second. Rodriguez pops up to left. So, again, it's a two-out rally. How many times when they've had meaningful innings, a lot of times it starts with two outs. Mendoza singles up the middle. They get a bunt down, and then we throw it away. So, there's our second error of the day. The next guy grounds out to the shortstop. So, that's two errors. Neither of them cost us. Okay? Neither. Top of five. Teal strikes out looking. Malewski grounds out to second. And Wires grounds out to third. So, again, it's a 1-0 ball game as we get to the bottom of five. And then Texas ties it. Borba, 3-1 count, hits a shot to left center. Off the bat, I thought it might stay in. The park plays big. And the ball doesn't really jump there, even though we hit some big flies. This one was just one of those majestic ones where he gets under it and it gets just enough and it gets over. So, it's a 1-1 ball game. And you feel bad because Duke Stone has pitched so well. Mansoor then goes down looking. Robbins doubles to left center. So they got a runner in scoring position with less than two outs. But Duke bears down here. Tindy flies out to left, and then Pat grounds out to the shortstop. So it's a tie game going to the sixth. Crosland comes in for Riojas and strikes out the side. Fry, Reese, Sullivan all go down swinging there in the top of six. Bottom of six, we bring in Ben Davis in place of Stone. And things get a little bit squirrely. Okay, they do. Rodriguez pops up to the left fielder, and then Mendoza walks. And we get up 0-2, and then it's like Ben couldn't throw a strike. We found out in postgame, according to Brian O'Connor, that it was a tightness of the back type situation. He did throw in the bullpen some on Sunday, so we don't think he blew it out. Doesn't make a lot of sense that he'd blow it out and we'd have him throw in a bullpen on Sunday. Jack Bauer comes in, and Jack does a good job. Again, Becerra singles through the right side with two out. One out. And then DePlante pinch hits for Larson, the DH, and he goes down swinging. And then Borba walks on four pitches. Mansour then grounds out to the shortstop. So it's a 1-1 ball game. It's time for a 9-out fight. And the Bulldogs pretty much laid the haymaker right here in this inning. Bevis is hit by the pitch. And then Parker grounds into a double play. And just like that, you think this inning's going to be over. But no. Bryce Chance, a rally starter at times, singles through the left side. Teal's then hit by the pitch on an 0-2 count. Right? That's a blessing, right? We got to make a count. They lift him, bring in Thomas Burns. Malewski then singles to left center field, and the birthday boy with the go-ahead RBI. And then Wires, in a 1-1 count, hits an absolute tank to left field to make it a 5-1 ball game. Man, there was so much gas in the air. The Texas people were ready to go. Fry grounds out to the pitcher. And so in this 9-out fight, Mississippi State now has a 4-run advantage. Bottom of the seventh. Ground ball to second base. We throw it away. It's error number three. Error number three. Will it cost us? Well, let's see. Tenney can't get two. We ground to third. They force the runner at second. We can't get the double play. Packed and walks. So surely this third error is going to hurt us, right? Rodriguez strikes out swinging. Mendoza then walks to load the bases. And then Becerra grounds out to second. We force the runner at short. So there's your three errors. There are your three errors, none of which led to a run. I'm just pointing that out to people. We did not make an error in game one. You make of all this what you will. All right, top of eight. Let's see here. Yeah, top of eight. They bring in Jason Flores, and he walks Reese. And then Sully flies out to left. Beviston singles through the left side. Reese stops at second. They bring in Walls in place of Flores. And then it's a wild pitch. Both guys move up. We got to make it count. You got to make it count. You can never have enough runs in the Southeastern Conference. At any point in a ball game, you never have enough runs. Parker grounds out the first. Good situational hitting there. Ground ball to the right side. Chases a run home. Makes it 6-1. And then Chance doubles down the left field line. And Bevis scores. Makes it 7-1. And you feel like right now we're going to win this game. Teal flies out to left. You felt good at 5-1. You feel great at 7-1. Bottom of the eighth. Bring in Reed Stallman for defensive purposes. Corvell strikes out swinging. He pinched it for DePlante. Borba grounds out to third. That's two quick outs. Mansour then walks. And that's it for Jack Bauer. We bring in Webb, who was absolutely pitching on fumes. And he's pitched a lot here as of late. Does get a ground ball off the leg a little bit later. But Robbins walks. Tenney walks. Loads of bases, but we get packed to fly out to left field. So no damage done. Top of nine. Malewski goes down swinging. Wires flies out to center. Fry with a two-out single through the right side, but then Ace goes down swinging. 7-1, we just got to get three outs, man, and we've leveled up a series here. Rodriguez homers to left center at 7-2. We're thinking, okay, that's cool. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine, right? Solo home runs don't get you beat. Mendoza flies out to left. There's your one out. We're two outs away from the win. Becerra then singles to the pitcher. Just couldn't get a play made there. Livingston pitch hits for Corvier. Well, he's walked. Borba then walks, bases loaded. Now you're starting to get a little concerned, as am I, but Mansoor goes down swinging. It's now a 7-2 ball game with two outs. Robbins, the leadoff hitter, singles back up the middle and two runs scored, 7-4. And then suddenly, there is drama at Dishfalk Field. Tenney's then hit by the pitch. Dane Burns out here trying to close this thing out. And we get packed to go down swinging with the bases loaded. So the winning run is at the plate in a game that we were up 7-1 to start the inning. Craziness. And that's the thing, too, that's so crazy. When you go back and look kind of in hindsight, right? The first 16 innings of this series, we were outstanding on the mound. Absolutely outstanding. Outstanding. Gave up four runs in 16 innings. Craziness, right? And you feel like, hey, you know, we got save some bullpen. However, Ben Davis has a tied back. Maddox Webb takes the ball off the leg. Make sure your bullpen's going to be thin on Sunday. But Bulldogs win the game 7-4. No matter how the final score read, it's a win for Mississippi State. And going back, kind of looking at our heroes here. Again, kind of spread around there. Bryce Chance gets a couple of hits. Drew Weyers a couple of hits. He's your MVP of the game. That big swing there to put Steve ahead. But Kevin Malewski, you know, he's one for four in the ballgame. Scores a run, but also drives in a run. Very instrumental on his birthday there. Jack Bauer credited with the win, but Duke Stone gave us a great start. He goes five innings, five hits, one run. It is earned. Five strikeouts and then one walk. Also had a hit by pitch. 86 pitches. Again, you don't want to overstress him and take him to 110 pitches when he's going to have to move up a day, more than likely this week. Ben Davis, of course, you know, the immediate concern was he's maybe seriously injured, and now it doesn't appear to be the case. You may recall last year, he had some back issues at times. Jack Bauer walked four. Didn't give up a run. Maddox Webb, again, a guy with a closer's mentality, but, you know, he's pitched a lot here as of late. It'd be nice if we could get through the midweek without having to throw him, right? Dane Burns earns the save. So, series now level at one game apiece as we get into Sunday. And Sunday could not have gotten off on a better start. That's the thing you want. Like, you want to get out of the gate on Sunday. You want to get out of the gate. You want to get it into their bullpen. And you want to start extending. Well, we were able to do the first of those three things. And we'll get going here with our play-by-play. Fry goes down swinging, and then Ace walks. Sully goes down swinging, so there's two outs. You're thinking, okay, we're not going to get anything out of this inning. But you're wrong. Blake Bevis then walks. Great at bat for Blake. Parker, again, situational hitting, just knocks that ball back up the middle, not trying to do too much, singles it back up the middle. It is a 1-0 ball game as Reese touches home. Valenkis, who started in place of Aiden Teal, Bryce played center. Valenkis played left. He walks. Quality at bat, loads the bases. Bryce Chance in a full count. We talked a little bit about Harrison. He's a guy that you know, kind of pitches backwards, but he didn't want to walk in a run here. And so Bryce gets something and hits his first home run of the year. So Bryce Chance is now homered in every year of his college career. It's 5-0, and we're feeling great. And I turned to Jacob Bain and I said, there's a lot of ball game left. I'm not trying to be negative. There is a lot of ball game left. They're not going to quit. They're Texas. Malewski goes down swinging, but we feel great. We just need Charlie to go out there and get some things going for us, and he gets an out on the first pitch. Robbins grounds out to third. It's good development for Charlie, right? Tenney then grounds out the first, and Pack grounds out the second. So three very routine ground balls in the first. You're feeling a little bit exuberant at this point, right? Top of second, State, Wires, Fry, and Reese all go down swinging against Harrison. And it was pretty obvious that the fastball, again, wasn't dynamic. If you read my pitching previews, you'd know that. But, man, he was spotting up that changeup and those breakers away. And we had trouble with him. We did. Bottom of second, Mendoza singles to left field, and you start thinking, okay, well, this is trouble. This is trouble. And then we nearly get two. Can't get to. I say nearly get two. We attempted to. We didn't. We couldn't turn it. But we get the lead runner. And then Becerra flies out the center. That's the first ball they've hit out of the infield. And then Borba strikes out swinging. And you're thinking, hey, maybe we're going to get the South Carolina start from Charlie Foster. Right now, you're already fantasizing about what that RPI could be, right? Top of third. Again, State needs to extend here. Sully goes down looking. Bevis grounds out to short. Parker gets on a throwing error. And then Valencia grounds out to third. So the two-out error doesn't hurt Texas. And I just want to point out again to you guys here, for those of you that have kind of kept up here, State made one error in this ballgame. More on that a little bit later. More on that a little bit later. All right. We get to bottom of third. Corval walks, and then Mansoor walks. And so here's, again, some Monday morning quarterback for you. And I said this in the moment. I really thought Parker should have gone out after the second walk. And some could argue, well, he should have gone on after the first walk. Well, that's the gift of hindsight. The fact that he had kind of been cruising through two innings, one walk's not going to concern you. But you have a full count that doesn't go your way, and then it's a four-pitch walk. I would have gone and talked to him and settled him, especially knowing his history, right? I mean, again, that's not me being critical of Charlie, but he is a guy at times when he faces some adversity, he kind of tenses up a little bit. Well, what do you know? They run a double steal. So now there's 2 men in scoring position with nobody out. Robbins then walks. Then we go out to talk. I think it's a little bit late. And also, in case you don't know, Robbins is a leadoff hitter. I think that was an opportune time to go out and visit. You walk the 8-hole hitter and the 9-hole hitter, and there's a reason those guys are hitting that deep in the order. You got to go settle him down, and we don't. And then Tenney, on a full count, is hit by the pitch. Even if he's not hit by the pitch, he's getting on because the ball's clearly inside. So we have forced in a run to make it 5-1. Now we go get him. Gleason comes in, and I'll give Gleason a lot of credit here. At least he was around the plate, right? And Jack's going to be a great pitcher for us. He's already pitched more than we ever expected this year, and he's been a very valuable member of our team. Just didn't have his best outing on Sunday. Pack singles to right, makes it a 5-3 ball game. Then he's still second. So, again, now, again, there's runners at second, third. Mendoza's walked on 4 pitches. Bases loaded again. Rodriguez then singles to right. 2 more runs score. We're tied. Then Becerra doubles down the left field line. Now it's a 6-5 Texas game. Well, that's it. We bring in Brendan Sweeney. He gets down 2-1 in the count. Borba then doubles down the left field line and 2 more runs score. It's 8-5 in favor of Texas. Corval grounds out to third. Borba advances to third on the play. And then Mansoor on a fielder's choice. We bring the infield in. They hit a ground ball to Gehrig, and he throws a strike home, and Maluski gets a tag down. Really good play on both ends. Mansoor then still second. Right? So it's like we constantly see Texas on the attack here. It's like they knew they had us on the ropes, and they kept putting pressure on. And even though I hated that it happened to us, I respect it. It's good baseball. Robinson singles to left center, another run scores, and then Tenney flies out to mercifully end the inning, his second at bat in the inning. And it's a 9-run inning. Guys, if they just score 4 or 5 runs here, it's a different conversation today. Top of four, Bryce Chance refusing to quit because Bryce understands, like me, there's plenty of ball game left. We got 6 more innings to play. He doubles to left field, and then we can't do anything with it. Again, a chance, because that's the thing I begin to think about. If you score here, it settles everybody down. It settles their crowd down. It kind of lets our guys know, hey, we're still in a ball game here. But it also lets your guys know we're not going to go quietly. Maluski lines out the short. You know what? That ball's hit 5 feet either way. We're first and third situation more than likely. Wires goes down swinging, and Fry grounds out to the shortstop. So we waste a leadoff double. Bottom of four, Texas looking to extend. They do. Pack pops up to left field, and Mendoza goes down swinging. So here we are again with 2 quick outs, and we still yield runs. Rodriguez gets down in a count, 1-2, and then triples down the right field line. The Becerra follows him with a double. The Chiefs to run home, make it 10-5. We bring in Peyton Fowler in place of Sweeney. He walks Borba, and then he's still second. Becerra still third. Double steals. When you've got inexperienced pitchers up there that don't know how to control the running game, this is going to happen. And this is not a shot at any pitcher. It's everybody's fault, right? Corville goes down looking. So the double steal doesn't hurt us. But, I mean, my goodness, they get a single there. We might have just played seven. Top of five, State goes 1-2-3. And, again, you're trying to climb back in here. At least we're, for the most part, putting the ball in play. Reese grounds out the short. That was into the shift, even though it's credited to the shortstop. He pulls that ball to the right side. Sullivan flies out the center. Bevis goes down swinging after a lengthy at bat. Bottom of five, we bring in Tyler Pitzer. And, hey, again, Texas still on the attack. Nine-hole hitter, Mansoor, gets a near-perfect bunt down. There's just no play to be made here. Didn't get a throw. And then he elects to steal. We throw him out. So, again, even though we get the out, look at what Texas is doing offensively. Guys, they're up 10-5. They're still chasing the next run. And, again, I respect it. It's good baseball. It's aggressive. We come out. We bring in a reliever. He's trying to settle in. We're going to rattle him, get a bunt down, and then we're going to try to steal second. Maluski does a good job there, and we get him out. They challenge a play, but it did, you know, the call stood. And how big was that caught stealing? Because when we walk Robbins, and then Tindy strikes out swinging, Pack flies out to center field. I mean, again, you begin to work this thing around here. That's caught stealing was huge. Top of six, LeFou back in for Harrison. And then Parker triples the center field. Pack kind of, was it Pack? I can't remember. Maybe. There was a catch earlier in this ballgame. It was kind of a hot dog catch. Like he didn't have to slide or dive for it, but he did. This time you probably just got to play it on a hop, right? I mean, it's a 10-5 ball game, and you got a new pitcher in the game. Just play it off the hop. But instead, we try to make the big play there, and it gets loose and ends up being a triple for Parker. You got to get the run home. Well, Valencius grounds out the short. They're willing to trade the run for the out. It's now 10-6, though, but now all of a sudden you feel like, hey, we can put an inning together here, and we can really make this interesting. Well, they helped us a little bit. Bryce Chance walks on four pitches, and then he's still second. So now you've got a runner in scoring position with less than two outs. Maluski then walks. And then Wires grounds to the pitcher. Works like a bunt. It's kind of a check swing deal there. Moves the guys along. And then Fry walks. So base is loaded. The tying run is at the place in the form of Ace Reese. He gets down 0-2, fouls the ball back, and then gets called out on a ball that was down and in. And listen, I get it. It's too close to take. And this is another reason why we opened the show talking about ABS. I have friends that have analytics, and it wasn't a strike. So all of you on TV and on social media that said, hey, that ball was not a strike, you're correct. But at the end of the day, maybe you got to spoil a pitch. You can't leave it in their hands, especially in this situation here. Base hit there probably gets you two runs, right? And then, again, it may be a different conversation. And I'm in no way blaming all this on Ace Reese. He took a ball that he believed was a ball, and it was a ball, and we didn't get a call, right? Simple as that. Bottom of six. Mendoza doubles to right center. Again, so they're thinking, hey, we got a runner in scoring position, less than two outs. We got to get this thing home and get that run back. They don't. Rodriguez goes down swinging, Becerra goes down swinging, and then Borba flies out to center field. And so, hey, right? Tyler Pitzer doing a job right here. Gives up the double and then refuses to yield. All right, top of seven against State. It's a nine-out fight. We're down four. You feel like, hey, you can score here, maybe get two. You're right back in it. You got to put stress on them. But we don't. Sullivan goes down looking, lengthy at bat, and we take a called strike three. You can't do it. Bevis then grounds out the short. Parker grounds out the first unassisted. And it kind of felt like this was like our last gasp. Bottom of seven, they bring in Larson to pinch hit for Corville, and they walk him. And they pinch run for him, and then Mansoor pops up to the plate. They call it a foul out. I think it was actually in fair territory, but at the end of the day, it all counts as an out. We go to pick him off, and we throw it away. Runner takes second. So there's a free 90 for them, right? Free 90. Well, here's another free 90. We bring in Bellevue, and he throws a wild pitch. We hadn't seen Bellevue in a while. He's got a bright future, but, you know, we had to throw him. And Robbins singles through the left side. run scores. There's that free 90 coming back to haunt you. And then there's another wild pitch. So we're giving free 90s. You get a free 90. I get a free 90. Everybody gets a free 90. Bring in Braden Booth, who actually did a good job for us. He gets Tenney to fly out to left, and then Pat grounds out to second. But again, you walk a guy, and you feel like you're about to get out of this thing, and then you give them the free 90, and then another, and then they score, right? I mean, you just can't do it. That's not championship-level baseball. All right, top of eight, they bring in Cozart to pitch for Crosland. And again, we have an opportunity to make some noise here. Yes, we're down five again, but we got six outs to work with. We can put up a big inning, too. We're in that bullpen, and some of these guys are pitching for the second time on a weekend. Valencia's good at bat here, gets down 1-2 and earns the base on balls. And then Chance walks again. So now all of a sudden, yeah, base hit here. Because I love the home run, but sometimes home runs can be rally killers. You know, a double here would be great. A double here scores a run, gets you runners to second, third, nobody out. However, the only double we got is a double play. And any thought we had about a comeback, probably for the most part, was exhausted there. Wires is hit by the pitch, and then Fry grounds out the short. Bottom of eight in 11-6 ball game. We walk Mendoza. We walk Rodriguez. Now, personally, I would have bunted here because, again, you can never have too many runs. But instead, Becerra, maybe he can't bunt. Becerra flies out to left. We bring in Parker Rhodes, who we hadn't seen in a while, and he gets Rodriguez. They run the double steal again, and we throw him out at third. So a couple of caught stealings there. And then Borba goes down swinging. So, again, good job. Top of nine, Reese flies out to center. Sully lines out to second. Bevis then lines out to right field. All three balls hit fairly well. At the end of the day, it's 11-6 ball game, and we lose the series. And I hate losing. I do. And, again, I go back. We had to get one. We got one. That's everybody. We got to avoid being swept. We did do that. But that's the bare minimum. If we really want, we want to make a push to a top eight and we let an opportunity get away, and I really felt like whoever won on Friday was going to win the series. That proved to be the case. And Volantis is an alien. We all know this, but we're very proud of our guy. And we made a couple mistakes. But, again, you know, I go back to this whole thing, you know, with this talk about all these errors, it wasn't an issue. I mean, you want to play clean. Don't get me wrong. But we did not lose because of any errors. And I want to make sure that that's abundantly clear to people. Because a lot of times things get on social media and people accept them for fact that it's not true. It's simply not true. Hitting heroes, Jacob Parker, 2-for-4 in the ballgame, also with two runs scored and the RBI. Bryce Chance goes 2-for-2, had 4 RBI and a couple walks. Bryce, again, I thought Bryce had a better weekend this weekend than last. And I think some of that, too, is just kind of leveling that swing out a little bit, not dropping his hands quite as much. But, yeah, Charlie Foster, not a great start. And if it was me, I wouldn't start him this weekend. I'd start Jack Bauer. That's what I would do. I don't know how you guys feel, but I don't think you can trot him back out there in a starting role. I mean, it's just, again, against LSU, we said, well, you know, LSU kind of ambushed everybody, right? But I think this week, you go out there, and again, he only gives up the one hit, right? Well, when you walk three and you hit one, they're going to score, right? The math doesn't work in your favor. But it's too important now, right? We got to change rotation this weekend. That's my feeling. We got to get Charlie right. We do. And, you know, maybe that's in the bullpen. You know, with Chris Billings, we're starting on Tuesday. You know, he's not going to start this week. So I think I'd probably go with Bauer on Sunday. That's my feeling. You may feel differently. But the hope is we get quality starts and we can save some arms, and hopefully Ben Davis and Maddox Webb are healthy and close to 100% this weekend and we get ready to go. But, yeah, Luke Harrison is who we thought he was. I didn't think we took enough advantage of him. We struck out 11 times on Sunday. But he gives up 5 runs on 3 hits in 5 innings. And again, he put some traffic on the bases himself. He strikes out 9. Hayden LeFou, I didn't think he bothered us all weekend. He only goes a third of an inning and gives up a hit, a run, walks 2. Brett Crosland took the loss on Saturday and then got the win on Sunday. And there's some things about his delivery. No, I guess Luke Harrison was credited with the win. But there's some things about Crosland's delivery that I think – the rest of the league will kind of figure out, right? There's some things that I thought we figured out, which is one of the reasons we had the big thing on Saturday. And we had some opportunities on Sunday, and just he made some adjustments, give him some credit. But there are some things in his delivery, and if you guys are baseball purists, you go back and look, you'll see. I'm not going to tip it off here, but you'll see there's some things that he does. It's very subtle between throwing the fastball and throwing the breaker. And you can go look at, he's kind of got that unorthodox, kind of crouched, leaned over, long-legged stance. But go back and see what you think, and if you see it, hit me up. And if you don't see it, don't. But if you see it, let me know what you saw. I'm just kind of curious to see. And again, I thought we were on it Saturday, and I thought maybe they changed a little bit on Sunday, but he did kind of revert back to it later in the outing. So just let me know what you saw. So Bulldogs lose 2 out of 3. We did make up some ground in the RPI, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. He's been in that meat grinder of a job for 25 plus years. He's learned a few things along the way to make the whole process a little less complicated for you. A lot of people out there competing and vying for your business, but rather than take a crapshoot with the whole thing, stick with the winner. Stick with Blair Chandler. Get his expertise and know-how working for you. Perhaps the dream of homeownership has been elusive for you, and it may not be strictly because of you. It may be because you had the wrong loan officer. If you're not ready, Blair can put you on a pathway to get ready to buy a home. Doesn't that sound wonderful? It does. Give him a call today at 601-500-2344, 601-500-2344. You can call or text him direct. That's his number. He's a Bulldog through and through. He is a season ticket holder in multiple sports, has a place here in town. He's a guy that rides the wave of Bulldog emotion just like you. He has closed loans for several Boneyard listeners over the years. You could be next. So whether it's your first time, your next time, your retirement home, or perhaps that game day condo, the only name to know is Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. All right, time for today's top 10 list. We'll have to go quick. By request, you know, we were going to do this on Friday, but my friend Benny Bruce died, and I wanted to pay homage to him. And so we did that, and a couple of you have reached out and told me how much you loved the Molly Ringwalds and to offer your condolences. And again, I haven't talked to Benny in several years. So my loss does not compare to those guys that have spent, you know, the better part of 30 years with him, right? And so in no way am I trying to suggest that it's some painstaking loss for me. But it does hurt when you lose a friend, especially somebody that was instrumental in your life at a very important time. So for all those that love and respect Benny, we our thoughts and prayers go out to you too. So we were going to do Dream Theater. So we're going to do it today. A band formed in 1985 at Berklee School of Music. And it's so interesting how technically proficient these guys are. If you're looking for a new band, like if you've never really taken the Dream Theater cruise, you owe it to yourself. Just put on Dream Theater Essentials, or you can start at the beginning. They had some interesting covers on their debut EP that you might enjoy. But it is incredible the following that these guys have. They are kind of like the musicians' musicians' band. That's who they are. So we'll go quickly. These are my top 10. It may not be your top 10. And with a catalog as expansive as theirs, it's tough. It is. It's tough to narrow this thing down to 10. I mean, you got a ton of albums. And, you know, I'm a Portnoy guy. I love everything he's done. But you got, what, 16 albums now? They had a new one come out last year, Parasomnia. Came out last year. So there's a lot to this, and there's also like some bootlegs and rarities. There's a lot of other things out there too, compilation albums. So if you want to get involved in a band that kind of has its own culture, this is the band for you. Yeah, it's incredible too. Like you can they've got all these cover albums and everything else. There's just a lot in the catalog. You're not going to get tired. Let me just tell you that. But it may make you consider giving up an instrument, because you hear those guys at the best, like the top of their game. You're like, I'll never be able to do that. And that's okay. That's why they've been able to put together a 40-year run as a band. So Dream Theater, my top 10. And again, we'll go quickly. We got a lot to cover today. Number 10 is Wither. Really like that one. I think one of those things, too, I love about not just this song, but a lot of the Dream Theater songs, is there's a lot of layers to it. There's like all this airy stuff, and it kind of pushes the guitar forward. And I think Al Petrilli is a genius. Number 9 is The Alien. The Alien. Number 8, A Broken Man. That's one of the more popular songs in the catalog, and it's very introspective. It's worth listening to. A lot of these songs, too, are like 7, 8, 9 minutes long. I think the shortest song in the catalog is like 5 minutes, like 4 minutes and 45 seconds, something like that. So they're very much a prog act of the modern era. Number 7, kind of a freaky one, it's Night Terror. And the percussion on this is next level. Number 6, a song that many of you may know. It's Panic Attack. That's number 6 on your list today. Number 5, probably the closest thing to a real ballad they have. And I really dig the track. It's like 9 minutes and change. But it's misunderstood. There is an authenticity and a genuine quality to this track that I think shows kind of a softer, more introspective side of Dream Theater. I think you'll enjoy that one. Number 4, As I Am. It's kind of anthemic in many respects. One of the best lyrical content songs in the catalog. Number 3, A Nightmare to Remember. What a clever name for a song, right? Another one that just kind of shows the technical proficiency of this band. And they're really, in many respects, just kind of like a rising force. It's incredible to think this many talented people could be in a band together. And even if Portnoy left for a while, they brought him back. And listen, Dream Theater is just, it's hard to even, kind of put them in a box. Number 2, kind of our gateway track. A lot of people would have this number 1, but I'm not going to. But I remember going to Sound Shop, and you could push the little button, and a little sample video would come up, and you could decide, hey, I saw this on MTV, or I wanted to watch this. And it's Pull Me Under. The percussion on this, like, that's the thing about Dream Theater from the very beginning, is you just never knew what was going to happen next. And it's like they have these compositions that come off a little bit odd, and maybe odd's the right word, maybe unpredictable is the way to go. I just don't know what's going to happen next. I don't know what they're going to introduce next. That's where this band from the beginning kind of took us. It's like, hey, you've heard rock music before, but this isn't going to be your classic just 2s and 4s. It's going to be a symphony in many respects of modern rock music. These guys are next level. From the beginning, they were next level. But number 1, and some of you know this from your rock band game playing days, it's Metropolis Part 1, The Miracle and The Sleeper. Ridiculous, man. Ridiculous. I forgot to mention earlier, The Alien, back number 9, that was a Grammy Award-winning track. There is also Metropolis 2, Scenes from a Memory. I didn't include that one, and you would think it would just kind of go, along as an accompanying track, but I love it. And there's just so many of these. Like, this is one of these bands, even if you don't know them that well, just pick an album and let it go. Just push play and let it go. And see where the journey takes you. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. I thank the gentleman for suggesting this. I forget his name. I thought we had done Dream Theater. Turns out we have not. Roy's like, no. Like, as soon as I tweeted, yeah, we've done Dream Theater. And he's like, no, we haven't. And I'm like, how did we miss Dream Theater? Of all the bands of my lifetime, that I think fans of all bands and all genres of rock music would enjoy is Dream Theater. And maybe you haven't given them a chance because they haven't had a ton of radio airplay. They have a huge following, huge. Some of the most technically proficient musicians of my lifetime, and they're in a band together. It's crazy. So be sure and check it out. I hope I did the list justice. There's no wrong answers when it comes to Dream Theater. None whatsoever. You can sit down and just kind of enjoy this. And when you hear the album in its entirety, there is a flow to this at times that seems a little bit unnatural. And what I mean by that is, it's like it makes you a little bit uncomfortable when you listen to it in its totality. It's like it's just a ride. There's an emotional component to this music. And it's not just because of the fact that they're just so incredibly proficient on their instruments. They're incredible composers. And they put this stuff together, and it's really unlike anything that you probably have heard, to be quite honest with you. So you owe it to yourself. Just pick out a Dream Theater album and just let it go. And you know, before you get maybe too deep into this, maybe start with Images and Words. You know, when Dream and Day Unite was the first one, but Images and Words may be the best place to start. And then maybe jump around a little bit. Maybe. But it's not one of those, you know, there's some bands out there, you know, it took them a while to find their sound. That's just not the case with Dream Theater. Yes, they've evolved and become more technically proficient, but they have been like this from the beginning. Like that, it's just, we talk about the alien. There's just some things about this band that is just so incredibly unique. And again, I've been a Mike Portnoy fan forever. Forever. And I'm looking up now too. Back when they did that EP, they covered Perfect Strangers by Deep Purple. Pretty incredible stuff. But I think that you will enjoy this in a way that maybe you don't expect, right? It's pretty incredible in that respect. So check it out. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanti on X at Dogmatic67, DawgMatic67. And you can find me on all forms of social media at ScoutSteveR. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. And why do we love Campus Bookmart? Well, they got the stuff we want. Simple as that. Yeah, they do. And it's more Mississippi State merch. When it's gift buying time in your life, think about us and think about Campus Bookmart. We just get us more Mississippi State stuff. You will be the hit of whatever gift buying occasion it is, whether it's Valentine's Day, birthday, Christmas Day, Labor Day, Arbor Day, graduation day. We want Mississippi State stuff. We just do, right? And there's a lot of things out there you could overthink and you could reinvent the wheel and say, I think they'll really like this, and you'll never see us wear it. And it's not because we don't love you. We just don't love what you picked out. They just won't tell you that. I'm being your friend here and telling you, just go get some more Mississippi State merchandise and just call it done. Don't stress yourself out. Oh, I need to be thoughtful. This is the thoughtful gift, more Mississippi State merch. Graduation's coming up too. Maybe think about that diploma frame. Visit Campus Bookmart in person next time you're in the greater Starkville area. If you can't make it to town, or perhaps game day shopping is a difficult undertaking for you, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. All right, let's take a look at the weekend it was, if I can get it out. Weekend that was in the SEC. Newsflash, I couldn't get it out. I had to pause. Let's take a look back. As you guys are well aware, there's a lot of, it's kind of separation time in the SEC. And we're having some teams that are having trouble separating from each other. Shows a lot of parity within the league. So let's go back again. And we'll take a quick look back at Thursday. And it was Vanderbilt and Alabama. Alabama wins at 5-4. They walk it off there in the night. So we get into Friday. Most of our series were scheduled to begin on Friday. Some got moved around due to weather. Alabama takes a series from Vanderbilt with a 5-0 win on Friday. Georgia begins a weekend that we expected some, you know, negative things to happen to Missouri. Well, the first one is they get shut out in game one, 4-0. But give the Missouri pitching staff a lot of credit. It was a 1-0 ball game in the bottom of the seventh. And then ultimately Georgia pulls away. And then Henry Allen injures his knee in the weekend and is now lost for the season. You hate that for him. Kentucky, a big win for them. We talked about going into the weekend that Kentucky kind of had their backs against the wall. Ben Cleaver goes 7 innings in the ballgame. Henry Ford, 2-for-4 with a home run and 2 RBI. But Kentucky wins it 9-2. They out-hit Tennessee 13-7. Arkansas with a mercy ruling of Ole Miss 12-2. They get it done in 7. They walk it off in the 7th. Hunter Dietz credited with the win. Bulldogs beat him. 6 innings pitch, 9 strikeouts, just the 1 earned run. And then Kahui Aloy, 3-for-4 with a home run and 3 RBI. For the Razorbacks. Oklahoma, a big win early in Norman, 4-3 is the win, and they get 3 in the bottom of the 8th to put this thing away. Florida out hit them 7-6, but in the end, Sooners get game 1. So we jump into Saturday. As I mentioned, there were some games due to the weather that were rescheduled. Georgia takes the series from Missouri with a 13-3 mercy ruling in the 8th. It was an interesting game again for a while. I mean, it's a 4-2 ball game headed at the bottom of the 6th. And from there, it was pretty much all Georgia. They get 2 in the home half of the 7th. Is that right? No, excuse me. 2 in the 6th, 5 in the 7th, and then 2 in the 8th to walk it off 13-3. I don't know if we consider it as walk-offs, but we do. Auburn absolutely crushes Texas A&M in game 1. I mean, absolutely destroyed A&M. You talk about a statement game in Bluebell Park. Auburn with 6 in the 2nd, 1 in the 3rd, 4 in the 4th, 4 in the 5th, and then 3 in the 7th as they mercy rule the Aggies 18-5. They limit the Aggies to just 6 hits, out hit them 19-6. Both teams commit an error. So great first game of the series for the Tigers. Speaking of Tigers, LSU takes South Carolina 6-1. South Carolina got up early 1-0 down at Alex Box, and then it was all Tigers the rest of the way. William Schmidt, former Bulldog commitment, gets the win there. He's now 5-4 on the year. Alabama with the sweep of Vanderbilt. We listened to some of this, and Alabama jumped out early 5-0. Vanderbilt battled back to make it a one-run game, headed to the 4th at 5-4, and then Alabama answers with 2. Vandy kind of climbs back in it with 1 there in the 7th, but ultimately Bama caps the scoring there in the 8th to win it 8-5. So huge series win for Alabama, and this absolutely crushes Vanderbilt. Crushes them. They're now 10-14 in the league with 6 to play. And so Vanderbilt's going to have to get hot here late, or they're not going to make the tournament. Kentucky wraps up a series win with a mercy ruling of Tennessee. 12-2 is your final. Tennessee limited to just 4 hits in the ballgame. Jackson Jelkin now 7-2. 8 innings pitch for him. He gets 11 Ks. Ole Miss battles back to even up the series with Arkansas. 11-4 is the final. And Ole Miss came out early, riding the strength of Cade Townsend. 5 runs in the first for Ole Miss. Another in the 4th. And another in the 6th to make it a 7-0 ballgame before Arkansas got on the board. With 2, and then from there they kind of traded back and forth, but Ole Miss kept answering, and so 11-4 is your final. Hayden Federico, who only pinch hit against State on Tuesday, a 3-for-5 effort for him, and Kate Townsend credited with the win. Auburn takes the series from Texas A&M in College Station, a much different game in Game 2, but Auburn jumps out early 5-0 in this ballgame. 1 in the first, 1 in the second, 3 in the third. And they don't score the rest of the game. You kind of know my policy. When you don't score in 8 innings of a ballgame, you typically lose. Well, they did it in 6, right? A&M kind of claws their way back. 1-3, 2-4. So it's an interesting game. And they get their 4th run in the 8th, but could get no closer as the Auburn bullpen stands tall and closes out them and the series. Florida evens things up at Oklahoma with a 10-5 win. I don't know what it is about Florida and Oklahoma. I just can't get excited about either one of those teams. But, so they've split. And then, of course, LSU takes game two from South Carolina, 7-3. Two of Carolina's runs come in the ninth, which makes them pretty much inconsequential. They're up 1-0, and they didn't score to the ninth. That makes for a tough night, too. All right, so we get into Sunday's games. And then we'll kind of take a look and see what this means for all of us, right? And we'll look at Nichols in our final segment. Georgia, Mercy rolls Missouri, and pretty much, well, not mathematically have done it. They have pretty much wrapped up the SEC title, pretty much. We'll get to that shortly. They went at 14-4. They out-hit Missouri 13-7. Trey Phelps, 2-for-4, a home run and 3 RBI and a winning effort. And Caden Aoki, now 7-0. Six innings pitch. And again, Georgia's kind of figuring some things out. They were already playing well, and they're kind of shoring up some problems in that pitching rotation. Tennessee salvages a game for Tennessee, but man, it went down to the wire. It did. Landon Mack actually pitches game three here. As we get to the ninth inning, it is a 7-6 ball game in favor of Tennessee. And then Tennessee puts up a three spot. You think, dude, we're cool, right? We're good. And then Kentucky puts up a three spot and, of course, has the tying run on base and ultimately fell 10-9. So Kentucky nearly pulled off a sweep of Tennessee. Both teams now 11-13 in the league. Texas A&M does salvage one from Auburn. Auburn put together a late rally but just could not get over the top there. The A&M with one in the first, three in the sixth. It's a 4-0 game headed to the seventh. Auburn gets one in the seventh and then two in the ninth and just couldn't get the tying run home. Caden Sorrell, 2-for-4 night for the Aggies. And so, again, that's a big win for A&M just to get one from Auburn. And you lose a home series, man, it's never a good thing. Florida, that's what they do. They take the home series away from Oklahoma. 13-2 is the final. They walk it off. They mercy rolled them in eight. They get a snowman there in the fifth. That proved to be the difference. Big innings often happen on Sunday, unless you're South Carolina. LSU, 7-0 winners to complete the sweep. Of course, State's got three wins over both of those teams. It all kind of works out the same. Cade Arumbide, the catcher, 3-for-4 night and an RBI. And then Arkansas walks off Ole Miss with one out in the ninth, I guess it was, and 5-4 is your final. It was a 3-1 Rebel lead into the fifth. And then ultimately, Arkansas ties it in the sixth. And then Ole Miss gets one in the eighth, and they think, oh, here we go. But ultimately, Arkansas walks it off. And now Arkansas, a game ahead of Ole Miss, as they take the series from the Rebels. So, what does it all mean? Well, let's kind of check it out here. We went into the weekend in fourth place by ourselves, a game ahead of Auburn. Now we are tied with Auburn. Just ahead of our series this weekend, and we'll talk more about that later in the week. But Georgia, 18-6. And, of course, by Auburn taking two from Texas A&M while Georgia swept Missouri, they have picked up a game on their lead. They're 2.5 ahead of A&M and Texas, and then four games ahead of Mississippi State and Auburn. It may boil down to us and Auburn for this top eight national seed if we're going to get a fourth one. Right? Now, of course, if we go take care of business against Texas A&M, maybe we knock them out and everybody kind of moves up. But we'll see. So it makes this weekend series all the more important, for sure. Now, let's kind of start at the back end here and work our way up. Missouri, 4-20. Pretty much assured of being the last place team unless something crazy happens. South Carolina, 7-17. And then there's LSU, 9-15, 14th in the country, 14th in the league, pardon me. But they're in a situation where they can finish no better than 500 in the league this year. Vanderbilt's 10-14. And again, their stock fading fast. Tennessee, Kentucky, both 11-13. And then Ole Miss and Arkansas, 12-12. And if you're Ole Miss now, you got to begin to wonder a little bit about hosting. You know, that's the thing. I really feel like Ole Miss is starting to fade a little bit. That they made a big run. Give them a lot of credit. A lot of people left them dead for buried. But, Bianco has been a guy that has played well in May. You know, so we'll see what happens. Arkansas and Florida and Alabama all a game ahead of Ole Miss, Arkansas, Kentucky, or excuse me, Ole Miss and Oklahoma, and a game behind us in Auburn. So still kind of a logjam in the top half of the league. This weekend series, huge, huge, huge for Mississippi State. I don't think any of you could disagree with that. Huge. So that's where we sit. You know, obviously you have a chance to kind of move up and maybe overtake Texas, and you don't get that done, and then you lose a little ground to Auburn, but now you're even with them. So let's take a look at kind of where we are in the RPI standpoint. We had moved up to number 7 after that win. And again, just kind of playing better teams kind of leads to less of a fluctuation in your RPI. Bulldogs now 9th in RPI. What's interesting, Texas A&M is 8, Auburn 4. Those are your two next 2 weekend opponents. And so again, win or lose, you should be in pretty good shape, but we need to go get a couple of wins this weekend. You need to find a way to get, if you get 4, right, that gives you 18 wins in the SEC. I think that locks up the top 8 national seed. You get 3, I think your hosting is a strong number 9 or 10, right? And you got to see how the traffic clears around you. But you know, you only want a couple more games. You're really kind of leaving it up in the air. I think you got to get a minimum of 16 to host. I think you got to get 17 to be in the conversation to be a top 8. I think you got to get 18 to feel really confident about that. And again, there's so many variables that go involved with all of this. But you know, Southern Miss now behind us at 11 in the RPI. And so it's one of those things, again, you kind of – look at with Southern Miss, their RPI, win or lose, is going to continue to drop due to quality of competition. Ole Miss, obviously, now behind us, too, at 13. And so there was a lot of discussion. Some people thought maybe Mississippi would get 3 host sites. As we sit here today with 2 weekends to go and SEC play, Mississippi State is the most likely of the Mississippi schools to host. We just got to continue to hold serve. And again, right above us is Texas A&M. Florida State there at 7, North Carolina at 6, Alabama at 5, but they're 13-11 in the conference. And again, we'll see what happens with them. Auburn at 4, Texas at 3, Georgia Tech, a team that just won't go away, at 2, and then UCLA, of course, at number 1, 24-0 in the Big Ten. You know, but we talk about strength of schedule, right? State strength of schedule now is down to 12th, right? Or maybe up to 12th, it's a better way to say that. But that was the thing a lot of people were talking about over the course of last week, the strength of schedule. And then you look at, you know, Texas A&M is 24. Auburn is number 1 in strength of schedule. So you see why the Auburn RPI is what it is, even though Mississippi State has won more games and has an equal record in conference play. It's just the non-conference strength of schedule is benefits in playing Georgia Tech, for one. But we're right where we need to be, and it's all within our hands. Not anybody else's. Now, you start losing games, you go 500 down the stretch, then all of a sudden these other variables are a part of this thing. But you've got the Nichols game tomorrow, and we'll talk about that here shortly. But also, you got 6 SEC games left. You go 4-2, I think you've handled business. You go better than that, you're golden, right? I think you have to go 4-2 to feel great about getting the top 8. Because I think the other metrics will line up pretty well. Some people are saying, well, you know, I don't know, Mississippi State has enough Division One or Quad One wins. Well, you go 4-2 down the stretch, it gives you 13. You know, so we'll see how things play out. But it'll be interesting what the committee decides to emphasize this year. But again, Mississippi State, right where we need to be, maybe not quite where we want to be. And so we'll just need to kind of finish up these last couple weekends. Final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none. Especially when you're bringing a large group to town, and you should, right? Be sure and Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page pops up. You can check out all the amenities available to you and your guests, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area, plenty of parking. That's an underrated amenity, especially when you think about getting a lot of people together. It's the old renovated country club clubhouse out past the Highlands, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. They had plenty of parking for all those golfers. They got plenty of parking for you and your guests. We just don't want you throwing a rager out there. Now, part of that Google search is going to unearth some booking options. You can go Airbnb, you can go Vrbo or VRBO, whichever you want to call it, and or you can save some money by booking through the Evolve website. Use promo code BSR10. That's BSR10, the number 10. That gets you 10% off your stay just by listening to us on this show. We stayed there New Year's of 25 and had a blast. We may do it again. You know, last year, I told you we took the show on the road. But man, it's just something great about getting everybody together under one roof. And that's one of the things you should probably enjoy and spend some time with yourself, is getting the friends and family together, the people that you care about the most, and making some memories. All right, final segment, Star Vegas Clubhouse, right? So let's talk a little bit about Nichols. They are an improved club from a season ago. And you may recall that we nearly lost to them down in Biloxi last year. We won that game 2-1. Maybe you've forgotten, but that's the truth. I tell you, before we get to Nichols, let's just kind of run through what's going to happen on Tuesday. Presbyterians at Tennessee, North Florida is at Florida, Auburn is at UAB. Man, could that not be a dicey game right there? Right? Alabama's at Troy. That could be dicey too. We got a win over Troy. We don't play Alabama. Already got a win over UAB. Prairie View against Texas A&M. They may cancel the game. Tulane's at LSU. Texas San Antonio at Texas. You remember, Texas San Antonio won the regional at Austin last year. Louisville and Vanderbilt will play at Hawkins Field there in Nashville. Arizona State will be at Missouri. Oh, they've already canceled that game. Yeah, they've already canceled that game. Well, that's probably Arizona State not wanting to hurt the RPI, but that's where we are. So let's take a quick look at Nichols, formerly known as Nichols State, down in Thibodaux, Louisiana. Great folks in that part of the country, man. It's true, the case, man. Lafourche Parish, all those river parishes down there, it's all great, man. Everybody down there, you know, really from home in Thibodaux over, it's just great people, man. It's just how it is. And so we'll take a quick look here at what they've done to date. They're 25-22 and three games out of first behind Southeastern Louisiana. Now, they will travel to Hammond this weekend to play Southeastern. You know, a sweep, you could take the league because you'd have the tiebreaker, right? So they still got a lot to play for. And as a result, coach said, you know, they know they probably got to go win that tournament because there's not going to be an at-large bid for the Southland Conference. But give the Colonels some credit. They opened up on the road at Tennessee. They got swept. They lose to South Alabama. Then they go to LSU, who was number two at the time. They lose there, and then lose to UT Martin to open the next weekend series. So all of a sudden, you look up, all your dreams and hopes and aspirations are staring right back at you as you're 0-6. 0-6. They've gone 25-16 since then. Yeah. So they end up taking, it's a four-game series against UT Martin. They take 3 of 4. They get Dillard in a mercy rule game. Then they drop the first two to McNeese. And that's in Thibodaux. They salvage a Sunday game, and you go back, man, you wish you had one of those back. They beat Tulane on Taco Tuesday, which reminds me, tomorrow is Cinco de Mayo, which is also Taco Tuesday. How about that? They travel to Southern Miss and beat them the night after Southern Miss beat us. And we kind of figured that may happen. Southern Miss won their Super Bowl and then, you know, lost to Pro Bowl. They go to Texas A&M Corpus Christi. They sweep them. They mercy rule Jackson State. They get Xavier of Louisiana 5-4. And then they get Texas Rio Grande Valley to come to Thibodaux, and they sweep the Colonels. They had 90s night that Friday. We should probably do that. Can we have 90 or even 80s night? Can we do that? Is that too much to ask? I'm happy to put the playlist together. But they get swept. I mean, again, wouldn't you love to have one of those games back, especially getting swept at home? We know what that feels like. Then they go over and play Southern Miss in Biloxi. They lose that game. And then, again, they kind of turned a corner. You know, you have these little runs of futility, and then you begin to kind of figure some things out. You know, you want to get better over the course of a season. But they were 11-12 after that loss to Southern Miss. So 23 games, you know, things aren't going great. But you go to San Antonio, you win the series at Incarnate Word. Then you lose 2 of 3 at home with Northwestern State. You lose at Tulane. Lose the opener to Houston Christian, bounce back in Houston to take a pair of road games to win that series. Then you get 2 out of 3 against Lamar. Lose at South Alabama midweek game. Go to Stephen F. Austin in Nacogdoches, Texas, and sweep. One of those games was 24-3. But when you start looking at all this, like they've been in every game, which is just so weird. Even the games they've lost have been very competitive. They get Southeastern Baptist. They shut those guys out. 2 mercy rule games. Doubleheader, 7-inning games. My mistake. But they get both of those games. They lose at UL Lafayette 7-1. And then they lose to UNO in the first game of a Saturday doubleheader. And this is important. And then they win game 2. And then they lose in extras. So we talk about our beat up and kind of beleaguered pitching staff right now. At least we got to play on Friday. Now, we got to move up to Thursday, but man, when you think about what we got to throw tomorrow, and of course, Chris Billings is going to be on the bump, we probably need him to go 4 or 5. But UNO basically played 29 innings in about 36 hours. Not even that. Both of those afternoon matinees started at 3, so you know, you're talking 27 hours. So they're going to be a little bit tender. Play 2 9s on Saturday and then play 11 on Sunday. And Coach Herring says they're probably going to throw 6 or 7, maybe as many as 8 or 9 guys against us in a bullpen game. To look at their starter, and thankfully, we thanks to our good sourcing, we were able to get that information. We're very grateful to them. Austin Vargas will be the starter. He is a redshirt freshman left-hander. He is 0-2 on the year, 7.50 ERA, 10 appearances, 8 starts, 24 innings pitched. He's given up 28 hits and 28 runs. So a hit and run plus per, right? 20 of those runs have been earned. He has struck out 24 and walked 22. Teams are hitting 289 against him. He's also had 5 wild pitches and 4 hit by pitches. Control has been an issue. He basically serves as a opener, and he had spent some time throwing on weekends and then got moved to the midweek. He was part of that sweep when they got swept by Texas Rio Grande Valley. That was his longest outing of the year. He went 5 1/3 and then went 3 against Incarnate Word and then 1 2/3 against Northwestern State and then just an inning against Houston Christian, thrown against Lamar and Louisiana. So, again, 10 appearances, 8 starts, and we'll have a full breakdown on him this weekend. In the morning. Pardon me. It will do us no good this weekend. But they got a handful of transfers and a lot of JUCO guys. Nico Rio Berger leads the team with a .340 batting average. He's got 3 jacks, 27 ribbies. Grayson Schaefer is a name that kind of jumps off the page. He's a guy that was originally recruited to BYU when Coach was there. He's hitting .307, got 11 jacks, 48 RBI. And then there's Caston Thompson, a young man from the great state of Mississippi. Down there at JS, Mississippi, by way of Brookhaven Academy, he's hitting .304 with 12 jacks, which leads the team in 39 RBIs. So they got some pop in this order. Of course, they don't deal with a lot of SEC pitching, and when they have it, it hadn't gone well. But let's be honest, I don't know how much SEC pitching we're going to roll out on Tuesday. So this game may be a little more interesting than you want it to be. They also run the bases a little bit, 51-63, but they have been porous when it comes to defending the run. They've allowed 73 of 93 attempts, and we'll kind of see how things play out. But we should be able to take that extra 90, and what we really need to do is to get a lead and extend and be able, maybe we can get the game over early. Wouldn't that be great? Not going to forecast that, but that's what we got to do. And so we'll get this show up for you. And we got a couple things tomorrow, obviously, for you. And then we'll go cover the baseball game. We'll get Wednesday back on the show. And the next thing you know, we're playing baseball again. And our weekend series will go Thursday, Friday, Saturday this week and Thursday, Friday, Saturday the next week. There will be no midweek game next week. The final midweek game of the year comes on Tuesday. And again, we only got one midweek loss, and that was the road trip to Hattiesburg. So a chance to kind of close out again without ever having, you know, that poor loss. And we would be the only SEC team to be able to make that claim. And again, I think that may help us when we get into these tiebreakers with the D1 selection baseball committee. And it's not D1 baseball that seeds a tournament, just so you know. Some people tweet at Kendall Rogers all the time. And it's, you know, their projections are their projections. They're not seeding the tournament. If you hadn't done so, go to Dirty Noble Field and come enjoy some ball games with us. And then maybe I can get this out correctly. If you hadn't done so, go to DirtyNobleBook.com and you can get signed copies of all my sports titles, including The Dude, Dog Pile, Alpha Dogs, Stark Villains, Flim Flam, and the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls. Come float with us at True West Float Spa, Starville, running the Mother's Day special, two floats for $99. You've stressed her out enough, give her some time to de-stress, right? Dial 662-268-7601. Speak directly with my lovely wife, Dana. And come join us over at jeanspage.com. We were, of course, the only Mississippi State media entity on the road to Texas this weekend. I suspect that'll be the case for A&M unless somebody decides to make a trip. But, of course, you get a big weekend this weekend. You're kind of playing for something of significance the next. We may see some people join us. We'll see. We never pick and choose. We go out there and cover for you guys and do the best job we possibly can. But until next time, let us all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.